that with it thou mayst blow thy enemies to tiny bits in thy mercy.
It's all here. Fast kicking, low scoring, and ties. You bet.
Here's Higuain. Oh, it's gone in! There it is! The first hat trick in 12 years! Ola Kamara has it!
Columbus Crew FC looking like the next Candy Crush saga. Who doesn't love Candy Crush? I do.
Yes! Yes! Oh, God, yes!
Hey, buddies. It's... Hey, sorry about that. I'm here staring at Sam because that's what I'm used to. And then
I'm pointing at you.
I was trying to look. You weren't coming up for some reason. And then I see Ralph kind of doing some hand motions. Anyway, we got the good stuff here for you. Hey, buddies. It's the Massive Report podcast brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton and available at a craft beverage retailer of any repute near you, and the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street, a 21 and up barcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. It is episode 232 of this oh-so-distinguished podcast. We're recording on Monday, May the 22nd, for your reference. We'll do a quick roll call. Hey, Bart Logan here with you. Joining us today, we've got Patrick Murphy. Murph, what's up?
Not much. Just here, ready to talk some soccer.
Oh, good. I would expect nothing less. We've also got Ralph Trudell with us. Ralph, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Quick shout-out to the WPSL Columbus Eagles picking up their first win against Dayton Dutch Lions, those sons of guns that took away Eddie Gavin from us. But 1-0 in their WPSL season, so congrats, Eagles.
Attaway, ladies. We've also got Alex Stanek with us. Alex, how are you doing, sir?
I'm okay. I'm alive. I am not completely depressed yet about the Crew season. Ready to be optimistic. Let's go.
All right. Well, I think you're going to have to help walk some of us off the edge, because I think some Crew fans are getting there right now after this last game. And then we've got Sam Fahmy with us too. Sam, how goes it?
I'm packed. I have the tickets and the passport in hand, and I'm ready to rock and roll.
That's what I thought. Sam's going to be going on a quick we're going to loan him to Egypt, I believe, for a couple weeks, right?
That is right. I'm going to go play for the national team, and maybe we can qualify for the World Cup for the first time in 27 years.
All right, Sam. No pressure, but we're literally putting it all on your back. Okay. So
that's okay. I'm a big boy. I can take it.
Well, the Crew SC couldn't quite take it last weekend in New England. We'll recap that game, a very disappointing 2-1 loss to the Revolution on the turf there in Gillette Stadium. A loss that was pretty reminiscent of a lot of games in 2016 and some concerning trends on the defensive side of the ball that we are going to dive into. We'll also get some early grades for Kakuta Mane, making his second start of the season, another abridged start for him this past Saturday, so we'll recap that. We'll ask ourselves what, if any, moves do Crew SC need to make in the summer window when they'll come up. We'll talk about the upcoming U.S. Open Cup draw, where Crew SC are going to be opening up on the road, TBD where that is right now, and then we'll preview this upcoming match against Toronto FC to decide the Trillium Cup for 2017. We're not going to even be in June yet, and that the first piece of hardware will be awarded in the Crew SC season. But we'll start bringing it back to this past Saturday in New England, Boston, whatever you want to call it. And Patrick Murphy, a pretty disappointing result for Columbus. One of their more complete games, I think, and nonetheless a loss.
Yeah, I think you hit on it there. Team plays well, comes out. I think the first 20 minutes or so they dominate possession-wise. you know, pretty much all the stats you want to look at, they're on top. And then they get a goal from Ola Kamara, a great pass out of the back from Will Trapp, and another kind of half volley curling shot that beats the keeper there for Ola. So he picks up his seventh goal of the year. And then things turned really quick. A giveaway by the aforementioned Trapp, right about the same spot where he played the ball, and just inside his own half. And you know, New England was off the other way. Carrissi got caught with their fullbacks forward, and ball played out to Kai. Kai just lays it off across the box, and Hector Jimenez, while he made the run back, didn't get back in position, and Diego Fagundes there at the back post to score. And then Fagundes again 10 minutes later. This time, I believe it was Nico Ness was defending Kai, touched the ball away, but it went right to Fagundes, and there were plenty of guys between Fagundes and the goal, but he just sort of ran through all of them. No one was able to really get to him for one reason or another, and he slots it past Zach Steffen. And New England's up 2-1 all of a sudden, just, you know, 14 minutes after Columbus took the lead. And at home, they were able to kind of shut things down in the second half, you know, brought on an extra defender. They actually ended up picking up a really late red card. Andrew Farrell came in pretty high on Waylon Francis. But all in all, not what you want. You know, tough to go on the road and win, as we've discussed in plenty here on this podcast. But if there was an opportunity to do that, I think it was in this game where, you know, by everything but the scoreboard, I thought Columbus was the better team, and that didn't say much because neither team created a ton. But Carrissi certainly had chances. Justin Merrim hit the crossbar in the second half on a header. Some late chances for Adam John, for Jonathan Mensah had a couple that he couldn't finish. So the opportunities were there to at least get a point, which I think would have been acceptable. But yeah, so Columbus comes back after getting a win they probably shouldn't have last week, come back here with no points this time.
And you mentioned possession and Crew SC possessing the ball. I'm looking on the MLS stats right now. 64% possession for Columbus Crew SC, along with 14 shots compared to just 9 for New England. One of the really telling things about it, Patrick, and you kind of hit the nail on the head, that there's only combined a total of a 10-minute span where New England was outpossessing Crew SC for that game. That was 5 minutes in the first half when they scored that first or second goal there for Diego Fagundes, and then in the second half for about a 5 minute span there around the 80 minute mark. Otherwise, this was all Columbus Crew SC, and they generated lots of opportunities. Ralph, of course, there's one a goal that was called back for offside, but you saw the offense clicking everywhere but that final piece.
Yeah, and you know, it's for everybody. Let me see here. For anybody that follows me on Twitter, generally I am very possession oriented, and you know, everybody that's been out in the soccer world realizes that possession doesn't necessarily dictate whether you're going to win the game or not. Crew SC were doing some really good things with the ball when they had it, but this team is their own biggest weakness, because they seem to defeat themselves with, you know, really stupid mental plays. You know, you have Trapp that comes in with a really great assist on the first goal there to Ola Kamara, which was absolutely probably one of the most beautiful half volleys that I ever did see. Then he comes up with the terrible turnover in the 25th minute. And it's just, Carrissi really wasn't dominating the midfield, and they were giving the balls away just in those terrible areas where they were having just that one mistake. They were playing a great game, but so many times, like we've said this season, guys, is you can't win when you're chasing the game.
And that is what, you know, Carrissi found themselves in, and I like how you touched on that, Ralph, that these self-inflicted wounds that I think we talked a little bit about that last week, and how that was, you know, one of the things that's been pretty frustrating for this team, and one of the the issues that they still, we feel like they need a bridge in limiting those, Alex. But again, we saw a game that that Crew SC controlled the vast majority of, but for two opportunities that New England was able to capitalize and make them pay for.
Yeah, and they were really kind of bad goals to give up as well. Sometimes you have a goal and there's not much you can do about it. I feel like both of the goals that Crew SC conceded were avoidable if the situation was a little bit different. I think Artur's absence is still really being felt in both of those. And especially, I think it hurts Trapp. I thought Trapp had a really poor game in a lot of ways. He had that beautiful assist to Ola Kamara. But then I think he could have done a lot better on the second goal from Fagundes. I thought that the defensive midfield in general was a little bit off that game. I thought Abu was terrible. So there's definitely problems that need to be corrected. It's weird because last season our defensive midfield was very strong. You had Tony Chani and Will Trapp, and both of them were kind of able to hold down that center of the park. But then you had the problems at center back. You had sometimes problems on the wing. We seem to have pretty much corrected the problems at center back. There's still some problems with wingers, wing backs getting too far forward, not being able to kind of drop back. I think you saw that a little bit in this game. But we seem to have traded one problem for another with the defensive midfield situation. And I'm quickly developing a theory that this team is very good when Artur plays and is very not good when Artur does not play. And that's not a great situation to be in because you don't want your season kind of hinging on the health of one player, especially when that player has struggled to stay fit since this most recent injury. So I don't know if you guys have heard any updates on him. I have not, but it seems like we need to get him back as soon as possible and we need to keep him back for as long as possible.
Yeah, a couple tactical things. And you mentioned Artur, and you know, I agree with you. This team is significantly better when he's in the team. You know, I do think they may have a future situation where they're not going to be able to rely on him, especially if he decides or if they're not able to purchase him full time. But you know, they're going to have to figure out a way to play without him, one way or the other. He can't, you know, do everything for this team. But yeah, he was a guy who traveled to New England, and it was a surprise to not see him starting. I believe Greg Berhalter said after the game that it was a groin strain. He went, he tried to warm up, and just couldn't go. So nothing related to his arm. Could be related to the fact that, you know, he only had a couple days of training before he played the 90 minutes last week, and then you know, trained this week without, you know, maybe not as cautious as they should have been after he was able to go last week. So we'll see how he is this week. It didn't sound too serious, but you never know. But two things I did notice tactically with both teams' midfields. First, I noticed that Will was playing much more advanced a lot of the game, especially in the first half, whereas Abu was the guy kind of dropping off, playing in the spot that Will normally does. And I'm curious about, you know, kind of the decision on that. It seems like Will would fit more, you know, while he played well in that position with Nico Ness in there, he was, you know, a bit, you know, he's with a guy who has played that position and knows how to get into tackles and things like that. And that's not what I'm thinking that Abu's really great at. You know, I think he's more of a true central midfielder. But on the New England side, I think tactically they started off in the diamond that Crew SC expected and the diamond that they exploited in the first game. And then right around the Crew SC goal, they made a switch, and I think it was Kyle McCarthy who covers the Revs pointed it out on Twitter, and it was pretty noticeable after that they went to a flat four midfield, and I think it threw Columbus off. And you know, the give over by Will in the midfield was a direct reflection of that. He didn't have the space that they were finding early in the game there because, you know, they'd moved out of that diamond. So you know, I think two tactical things there that both had an impact on the game, and then you know, they made changes, and by the time Columbus adjusted, I don't think that there was much left in the game because New England kind of sat back and bunkered, and we all know how that goes for an opponent of Columbus that tends to do success if you have the lead.
Well, and Patrick, you talked about it, and that was one of the things I noticed as well with Will Trapp playing in that more, you know, traditional eight as opposed to the six role that you're used to seeing him dropping in and splitting the center backs to form kind of a back three when they're on the offense. And that's such an important position just because of, you know, the pressure is kind of the last guy back there in the middle. And to see it go to – it is – Are we thinking that it's, you know, in that case that it's Greg Berhalter thinks that Will Trapp brings more to this offense as he's playing more advanced than it is to, you know, risk somebody who may not be as comfortable in that role on the field where it's, you know, so vulnerable and you need to be able to win tackles and know what you're doing in that deep lying role in this particular offense?
Well, I think the thought, and this is just my speculation, is that, you know, if New England was going to play that diamond that they played in the first game, you know, getting Will Trapp a little bit further forward would allow him to kind of exploit that space in between the more attacking midfielder and the defensive midfielder. And I think that worked early in the match. The adjustments, though, I think kind of changed things. And in the second half, I did notice Will dropping in a little bit more, but... You know, you look at those two goals, obviously Will turns the ball over on the first one, but if he's back there in kind of his normal position between the center backs with fullbacks pushed high, you know, maybe they avoid, you know, say someone else turns the ball over in the same spot Will does, maybe they avoid that just because they have a bit more cover. So, you know, his familiarity back there, while he is a bit more attacking, and I think, you know, that may have been a smart move by Berhalter, one that New England didn't expect. You know, I think it also may have costed them on those two goals, and you know, that's just kind of unfortunate. I mean, sometimes tactics are going to work, sometimes they're not, and you know, the fact that they weren't able to score in the second half is really what Columbus's problem was.
Can we all take just one moment or so, a bit of time, to just gush about that Ola Kamara goal, though? That was a thing of absolute beauty.
Ooh, buddy. Ooh, buddy. I'll tell you, when I saw that, I was kind of watching a game. I was doing something else, but the Twittersphere blew up, and I was like, holy crap, and I ran back to the TV, and I saw it, and it was like, I don't think I've seen a finish that good in a long time, honestly. I'll go out there and I'll be bald. I'll say I don't think I've seen a finish that good in a long time from Crew SC. I've seen international finishes just about that good, but Crew SC, I mean, in the last 5 years, I think that's probably the best finish I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, he had the one earlier this year, the ball from Higuain that he had the volley on as well, that I thought was also really good. But this one's certainly up there, and, you know, to... just the placement of it, you know, I don't know if he meant to do it exactly as it did, but that was about the right spot that you need to put it in to bag that goal. And the ball from Will, I mean, if we're going to rag on him for giving the ball away and other things, I think we do need to give him credit for that assist, because that's what, you know, we've seen him do when he's played that more advanced role, and it's fun to watch when he's got it going in there.
Yeah, it was a tremendous assist, and it was a tremendous finish from Ola Kamara. And I think he's one of the maybe five players in the league who's capable of finishing a goal like that. I mean, the only player who I know for sure can do it other than Ola Kamara would be David Villa, who's capable of scoring incredible goals like that. But Ola Kamara is a really top-class MLS striker and the kind of player who we are very, very lucky to have here. And, you know, even when we don't win games – seeing stuff like that is still a joy to watch, and it's worth your time to check out the team for players like that.
Yeah, and I think it's funny, and we've talked about this, I think, with Higuain before. You know, these guys, because they're here in Columbus, because there's not the national TV recognition and whatnot, I think they kind of get passed over in league's eyes. And I know Ola Kamara got some pub coming into the season about what he could do and his expected goals and things like that, but... you know, like Alex said, I think he's definitely a top-class striker for this league, and, you know, you're right, Villa was the only other guy that came to mind, and obviously that he's the defending MVP and things like that. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I wish Columbus was seen by more eyes or talked about a bit more nationally, just so people would pay attention to players like him and Federico Higuain, who had one of the greatest nutmegs I've ever seen along the end line in this game, which unfortunately led to a pass to nobody. But other than that, it was pretty nice.
Well, I also think if you had Ola Kamara playing on Seattle or on Los Angeles or LA Galaxy, I guess, or Portland or a team like that, they would be one of the faces of this league. And so it is a little bit unfortunate that we don't get that kind of attention. But the fans in Columbus are very lucky to have a player like that. And kudos to the scouting network for identifying Ola Kamara and bringing him in. I can remember when we still had Kai Kamara, and I was talking to somebody from the Crew front office who's frequently at training. And they said, hey, if you think Kai Kamara is good, wait till you see this other Kamara that we've got, because he's even better. And literally said he's even better than Kai. And
well, the stats would back that up.
Yeah, I think he's – I don't want to get into the whole is he better than Kai thing or not, but I do think that there are very few players in this league who are capable of finishes like that, and we should enjoy Ola while we have him, because who knows if European clubs are going to come calling at some point.
And I mean, that's a good point too, but you know, one of the things I just marvel at, and I know we've touched on numerous times, but his off the ball movement is probably some of the purest I've seen in MLS. You know, it rivals that of, like we've said, David Villa or something of that sort. But I really like to watch him just make those off the ball runs, and just how much in sync he is with Higuain is definitely something to enjoy.
Okay, so I didn't watch the game on Sunday because I was tied up with other things, but I literally just looked at the goal right now, and wow, that's that is a finish. That is a, you know, we saw him do it the other direction with his right foot against, was it against New England when he scored that pass from Justin Miram? I believe it was, but that hit with the outside of the foot and have it curl to the far end of the, that's a beauty. But you know what? This goes to show you how much the gap between our first and second strikers are. And that's a problem. I think if anything, that's a glaring problem more than anything else, because man, you got a guy that can finish like that. And who do you have behind him? Technically, honestly, Justin Miram. Mm-hmm. I mean, is Miram going to become your second striker? Can you afford to have that, or can you afford to have somebody that fill in his place in order for him to be that?
Well, and it's interesting you say that, because Adam John had a chance, you know, in the second half when he came in and, you know, was one-on-one with the New England goalkeeper, Cropper, I believe is his name. And
two-on-one, you know, not, wasn't it? He had another opportunity.
Yeah, you're right. But just in terms of the shot, he, you know, it wasn't terribly placed. I mean, you know, if Cropper goes the other way, he can probably score that. But yeah, I mean, if that's Ola on the end of that ball, you expect it to be in the back of the net. When it's Adam John, you know, I think it's kind of 50-50. But you know, that is a guy who scored a career high 5 goals last year, which for a guy coming off the bench isn't terrible for the second half of the season. But yes, I mean, if there's a place that that lacks depth on this team, I think it's at that spot.
So I've been one of the people who said pretty consistently this season that I thought we need another striker to kind of drop Adam John down to the third string spot. But I actually thought he had an okay game. I really liked his movement. Thought he put himself in good positions. Thought he held up the ball well when he had to drop deep to receive the ball. And yeah, he did kind of shoot that chance right at the goalkeeper, but he got in a position to have that chance. And I didn't hate what I saw from him this game. So maybe he can work his way into a more kind of constructive role in this team. But I didn't hate what I saw from him. I'm sure we're going to talk about Mane as well at some point. But I liked what I saw from him as well. So there's a lot of positives.
John also picked up his weekly yellow card, which is, mm-hmm, you know, something you can bet on each week, assuming he plays.
That is true.
Here's one of one of the things I noticed most especially is that game wore on. You look at it, look at the corner advantage, 8-2 for Columbus, and you look at a player like Adam John if you're bringing him on, and that's where I think you need to see his presence felt. It's in the box on those, you know, set pieces and corners where he can be that big body, to play that ball down, to play it in on net. And you didn't really see him there contributing. And as that game wore on, and as they kept getting these corners and kept getting these opportunities, and I apologize, I don't know what the exact stats are for the season in terms of goals off of corners or set pieces, but I do think it's down. And when you're trying to catch up as they were late in that game, I think the best opportunity came from, well, you had the Waylon Francis chance in the first half, I believe, that he skied, which you kind of want to give him a break a bit, because that's a left back in there that might have been caught up in the moment a little bit and, you know, trying to go for glory with a quick volley. But then the other best opportunities, I think, all came from Jonathan Mensah. I know he got whistled for a foul on one of them. For using the defender to kind of springboard up and try to get his head on the ball. But are any of you else concerned about the lack of just even quality chances that were generated in that game or over the course of this season off of corners so far?
I mean, I think it's coming. I tweeted about this during the game that Crew SC in particularly, I think Jonathan Mensah is pretty much overdue for a goal. Because as you were seeing, he was getting getting in the position, doing what he needed to do to put himself in the right position. He just didn't connect. And like you referenced earlier, he was called for the foul. But, I mean, there were very good opportunities. I think it's going to come. It's a law of averages has to favor us, right?
I've learned not to trust any laws or anything favoring us. Remember, law of averages might favor us, but Don Garber makes the law in MLS.
They do have
those, solid point.
They do have a couple goals, not directly off corners, but both the ones from Krenali where Justin Merrim tapped them in. I think Krenali is clearly their most dangerous guy. On there, I think you saw a little bit from Jonathan there. He's not as big as Krenali, obviously, but
I think that's something that's kind of been an issue under Berhalter in general, if you want to call it an issue. You'd like to be better at set piece goals. I know that's something they work on quite a bit. So it was good to see them score a couple early, but they certainly had chances to capitalize on them in this game and could not.
Well, we mentioned him earlier, Kakuta Mane getting his second start, and another game where he saw some glimpses of it, but he looked kind of like he was a little bit on an island where you've got, you know, you had sort of your front three that were sort of working well together, and Ola Kamara, Justin Miram, and Frederico Higuain, and a lot of that I'm sure can be chalked up to chemistry, understanding the system and their experience together. But to me, it looked like a little bit, you know, Kakuta Mane didn't quite know what his role is or where to expect the other players to be making their runs. And so it was sort of kind of on his own, isolated, sort of forced to, you know, create something by himself, sort of what we're used to seeing in past seasons from Justin Miram, where if the ball would go over on the left side, suddenly he's there trying to challenge everybody one-on-one and not really involving the rest of the team.
Yeah, I thought Mane had two decent games put together, and I'll give him one solid game in these first two starts. I think this game was a bit of an improvement on the start in Montreal. There was that chance that he put in that we didn't mention earlier, right after Ola scored. A nice little move to get himself some space and a good low cross, and really Ola should have just tapped it in, and we're talking about a different game. But Ola kind of, I think, just misstepped and the ball went through his legs. But that was a good play. You know, could have been Mane's first assist. There was also, I think you touched on it earlier, Bart, the offside goal. I know a lot of people on Twitter were upset by that one, and I tweeted out a picture of it, you know, a screen grab right when I think it was Higuain who took the initial shot, hit it, and
you know, everything I saw, he was offside by just a little bit. So, but that's twice in 2 weeks for him to have a goal called back or to be offsides on a chance like that. You know, on one side, I think that's positive that he's looking to get in those positions. On the flip side, you know, you don't want to be a guy who's known for being offsides, a la Jeff Cunningham, though he did end up scoring quite a few goals. I think it'll be interesting to see how these performances, where they put him, I guess, when you have a healthy Ethan Finlay. You know, right now he's holding off Nico Hansen. People were worried that he was kind of buried on the depth chart due to this fitness thing and everything. But the one thing I do think is interesting is that in both games he's played just over 60 minutes, 62 minutes in the game this past weekend, 63 the weekend before. So I'm curious to see, you know, if that is a tactical thing in both games, or if that's, you know, still working on some fitness things for him to be 90 minutes fit. Something, you know, I'll try to remember to ask Berhalter about this week. But, you know, nothing that I thought crazy stood out, but I think he's certainly making progress, Kakuta.
And I'm liking what I'm seeing out of him because, you know, everybody was quite excited when he first came in, with Greg saying that he could contribute immediately, and, you know, we saw him for fitness related issues and all that stuff. But, you know, like you said, Patrick, he's had a really good two games, getting in the right positions, trying to make something happen. You know, the good things will come. Stay the course with Kakuta. I really do believe that he's going to be a very contributing member of this team for sure.
And certainly, I think, you know, we're all hoping for that for Kakuta, because he does have that, you know, that great skill set and that great speed. And you know, Alex, I know you've been one of his biggest vocal supporters when it's coming on. What are your thoughts after two, you know, almost two full games, not quite, I guess, two, you know, hours of Kakuta Mane starting?
I think there's a player there. I really like what I see. I don't think he's fully integrated into the system yet. I don't think that we're seeing him at his best. But I think that there's a player there who can really push Ethan Finlay, especially if Ethan Finlay is not in the kind of form that we saw from him 2 years ago. I think if we are seeing 2016 Ethan Finlay, I think Kakuta Mane might end up starting over Finlay. So that can be a good thing. I mean, we want the best players there. And like I've talked about in other podcasts, having two wingers in top form stretches the defense a lot in ways that will really benefit Ola Kamara, will benefit our chance creation and our chance conversion rate, and hopefully get us more goals. And that can make up for some of the stupid goals that we sometimes concede. So I think that'd be a big positive. I'm curious to see how he continues to develop, because I think a lot of the problems that I'm seeing with him are just he doesn't know where another player is, things like that. And so if he's in kind of training as a starter or as one of these guys who's in kind of the 11 lineup, maybe he's going to get more minutes with those guys. I'm not really sure. Maybe Patrick can talk a little bit about that, as to how they do that at training, whether they have, you know, a constant rotation of guys or whether they kind of have your set 11 training together as a unit more. Go ahead.
The way that we typically see it, and we don't see a ton, but throughout the week, they're broken up into various small-sided teams. Even when they play full field, it's not all done by starters and reserves, and I think that's meant to kind of keep everybody, you know, used to playing with each other and whatnot. But as the week progresses, I think you see a little bit more of that. And I know Fridays they do some stuff with the first team against the reserves, so to speak. So they certainly get some work that way, but you know, it's not that way throughout the whole week. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's the one kind of hurdle that I think Mane has to overcome. I think in terms of fitness, I think he's close to being there. I thought he played in some decent balls to Ola Kamara, especially the one that should have been a goal. I'm not sure how many assists Ethan has so far this season, but I think it's only two or three maybe. So it's not a huge bar that Mane has to kind of overcome in order to be the best right winger on our team. I still don't think Hansen's there yet. So I think it's a 1v1 versus Finley or Mane for that starting position. And I really think he might be the guy. So I want to see more from him. I hope that even if Finley comes back and takes that starting role back, that we'll still see Mane getting that last 30 minutes every game. Because I really think he's somebody who can contribute now, but he's also young. He's one of these guys that we can kind of get caught into the system, get brought up to speed on everything, and then keep for the long term. So I'm really optimistic about Mane's chances going forward for this team, and hopefully he won't let me down.
Well, you know, speaking of moving forward with this team, and when you're looking at this personnel, okay, now we've got 13 games under the belt. Crew SC 6-6-1 on the season, 19 points right now, fifth in the Eastern Conference. Before we talk a little bit about, you know, some of, you know, what would we like to do if the team's going to be shopping during the transfer window, I just want to bring up there, I see two other teams in MLS with just one tie, those being Houston and Vancouver, both in the Western Conference. Every other club has at least two ties. And, you know, I know Ty, obviously, you know, here in America, we don't like ties at all. But when you're looking at this team over the course of an MLS season, and you look at just the games that they've played this season, are you concerned about their inability, you know, not to find a way to get at least one point in there? This game especially provides a perfect example where they outchanced their opponent by a heavy margin and can't find a way to even salvage a point there on the road.
I think that's a good point, Bart, because early in the season we were seeing kind of a reverse effect of last year where, you know, they scored some goals in the last 15 minutes. You know, it was, you know, a positive. I think they've got three or four already this year, but they all came from pretty early on, aside from, I believe, Montreal. So, you know, that is one. Obviously, we can't overlook that game because they did get the result, you know, the full 3 points there with a late goal. But, yeah, I think, you know, you're going to have games throughout the course of a season where you turn what might be a loss into a draw, or even, you know, accept a draw on the road where, you know, maybe you were winning and it doesn't feel good right now, but in, you know, come the end of the season, oh, 1 point's better than none, and those kind of add up and help you, you know, make the playoffs or jump a couple spots or whatever the case may be. But yeah, I do think, you know, they have the old expression that a tie is like kissing your sister and no one likes ties. But I do think that they serve a point, and it would have been nice to see them grab, you know, a second half goal or something, at the very least to get a result of some sort out of this game, because I think they certainly created the chances to do it.
I think it's worth noting too that they're, you know, going against the Eastern Conference, which is head and shoulders above the West at this point this season, you know, and you're getting really involved in these knockdown drag out fights with the likes of Villa, Kyle Lahren, Fernando Adi, if I jump into the West a little bit, and you're going against Torres, Elise, and I can't think of the last striker's name for the Dynamo. But they're really getting involved with these teams, and I'm with Murph. I'd like to see 1 point, but also, too, I also like Greg kind of throwing all the cards on the table and saying, you know, this is what I have. I'm all in. I'm either going to go for the win or I'm going to get aggressive, and if I give up a lot, if I give up the final goal, I give up the final goal. But I'm content with the lesser amount of ties, but also, too, I'd like to see more wins come out of it, though.
This is a really weird season. Last season was weird, but this season feels a lot more kind of demoralizing than I think the point table actually suggests it should be. If you look at the table right now, we're 2 points off second place, and we're 3 points off the red line that we have to kind of get above to or stay above to make the playoffs. So we're closer to being in a real decent position than we are to being in a real not decent position. But yeah, the losses just hurt, and that is kind of a strange dynamic to have. Whereas last season we had, I think we had a lot of draws, right? Not that many wins, but a lot of draws. This season we have a lot of wins, but we have a lot of losses too. And it's not a great feeling. But again, this is MLS. This is the way that the league works. You have this parity. You have games that you go into saying, oh, this team sucks. We should totally beat this team. But the margin that your team is better than the other team is so small that you can get unlucky and just lose a game that you should have won. And yeah, it sucks, but I think it will all kind of balance out in the end. I think all this stuff is going to kind of even out. And again, I know I said this earlier in the podcast, I think that we are a good team when Artur is playing. And so assuming that we get him back and that he stays back, I think a lot of these kind of fears and a lot of this gloom and doom is going to go away pretty quick.
Yeah, Alex, and you mentioned, you know, that it's MLS and the gap between the good teams and the bad teams is pretty small. And I think if you look at the schedule, you know, assuming that teams stay about where they are here, and obviously you're going to have some of that. I mean, Columbus has played a fairly tough start to the season. You know, you've played Toronto twice. You've played New England, who, you know, I think is better than their record reflects. You've played Portland. You've played Houston on the road. So it hasn't been, you know, quite the cakewalk that maybe some other teams have had. And you look, as we get further into the summer, you know, there's a stretch at the beginning of July where you go to Minnesota. They're starting to figure some things out, so we'll see where they are. You're home against Philly. You go to Philly. Then you go to Real Salt Lake, who looks like a dumpster fire right now. At San Jose, they've been up and down. You get Chicago at home, and then you're into the middle of August, and things get a little bit more difficult. But, you know, I think there's a stretch during the summer where they could make a solid push. And, you know, with the opponents that they've had to start the year, having a, you know, what are they at, 500 record here at, 6-6-1, you know, it could be better, and it certainly probably should be, but you know, I think that they've kind of managed a tough start to the season fairly well. And you know, I think you couldn't be more right about Artur. You know, there's a lot of teams in MLS that would kill for a player like that, and when, you know, he's in the middle of the park, it makes a difference. I mean, you can look at you know, New England a few years ago with what's his name, the U.S. international.
Jermaine Jones.
Yeah, Jermaine Jones, and the difference that he made in the second half of the season, and they made that run to MLS Cup. And I think Artur's, you know, not the same type of player, but the same type of role within a team and the impact that he can have. So having somebody in there that can control things and you know, link up with Federico Higuain and feed the right guys the balls and things like that, you know, is going to make a huge difference. And you're right. When he's in the game, it's different. It's a different level for Columbus.
Well, Patrick, and that kind of, you know, leads into our other part of the discussion. You talked about New England and when they picked up Jermaine Jones. As we have got one of the second MLS transfer window coming up this summer, how do we feel about this Crew roster as it is in front of us? Does Greg Berhalter need to go ahead and you know, open up the purse and bring in some players, and if so, where do you think this team needs to improve the most?
Oops, there we go. So I think Greg needs to open up the pocketbook a little bit, and I'm going to take Alex's thunder and say a second striker would be the first place that I would spend the money if I was Crew SC, maybe looking at you know, just somebody who's got some pace off the bench and obviously can control the game. No shot against Adam John. He's the nicest guy out there. I don't think you'd find anybody nicer in Major League Soccer, but I would.
I'm the nicest guy out there, Ralph.
Yeah, you're all right. I like you. I like everybody here, but yeah, Murph and I got that bro love, I guess. But, anyway, though, you know, John's a great guy, but I think you got to open the pocketbook for a second striker. And then I'm going to kind of go maybe a little less than predictable, but I think a central midfielder or somebody who, I don't want to bring up Ryan Jack, because that looks like that's likely not going to happen anymore from what I'm reading, which we said pretty much. But, you know, a second center midfielder that could play alongside Trapp that can dictate the game like Artur, just in case we don't retain him from loan, because I imagine with the season that he's having this year, he's probably going to go back into Sao Paulo and more than likely get some good minutes. But I'd like to do a second striker and a central midfielder.
So that's basically the exact same thing that I was going to say, but I'm going to flip it. I think that the central midfielder is actually the most important position right now. As long as Ola Kamara stays healthy, we haven't had any issues with him so far, knock on wood. We have had some issues, some significant issues at defensive mid, and I'm not really sure that Mohamed Abu is the solution to our problems. I'm also not sure that Will Trapp is the solution to our problems. So I would look at a defensive midfielder. I would look at an older player more than likely. I know a lot of people think, oh, retirement league, blah, blah, blah. Bastian Schweinsteiger has worked out incredibly for Chicago. And I know a lot of people, when they signed him, said, oh, he's going to be terrible. He's been great. He's still totally able to do it. So I would look at a player, maybe a Marco Parolo from Serie A, somebody like that. Maybe Jeremy Toulon from I think he's in Ligue 1 right now, the French international, 32, I think he is, something like that. Player like that, experienced defensive midfielder, capable of making attacking plays going forward, something like that. Maybe even Thiago Motta, currently with PSG, somebody like that. Again, a player who's kind of nearing the twilight of their career. But if you were going to go with another striker, I would look for a player very similar to Adam John, actually. But just a player with a little bit more quality. And one player who I've suggested in the past, who I'm a big fan of, and this is a player...
Is Radamel Falcao?
No, I'm actually not going to say Falcao. I am not going to say Falcao.
But you'd take Falcao.
I would trade any two Crew SC players for Radamel Falcao, except for Pipa, because he's amazing. And he's not for sale. Any other two. But the player I would look at would be Andrea Petagna from Atalanta in Serie A. 21-year-old striker, very physical player. The guy looks like he's 30, but he's 21. He played for the Italian youth national team and has a very bright future. That's a player that if you could convince Atalanta to sell him, you could keep in MLS for a few years and then sell back to a European club and make a significant profit on. Kind of like we did with Giancarlo Gonzalez. He's not ready for the top European teams yet, but I think he could potentially be a player who could develop into a talent like that. I know AC Milan, he used to play for Milan as a youth player. They have met with his agent this offseason, so it's possible that he will go back to Milan this next season. Milan will buy part of his rights or something like that, but assuming no major European teams come sniffing around for him, I think that would be an option that we could look at as a player to buy as an investment, and somebody who could contribute immediately in a big way to a Crew SC team. But if you were going to sign a player like Petagna, you would probably have to change your system because you would want him to play. So you would want to probably go to the 3-5-2 that we've seen earlier in the season. And honestly, I think we looked good in 3-5-2. So maybe that would solve some of our problems as well.
I like what you said there, Alex, and you got me really thinking when you said an older midfielder. And again, not to make Murphy smile again here, but Michael Carrick from Manchester United, I feel like, would be a really solid defensive midfielder. I don't know what he's going to do. I think his contract might be up at the end of the year, but I think
it is. But they might bring him back.
They might bring him back. But yeah,
there's been talk.
If you could get Carrick on a free transfer, I mean, he's kind of, it's kind of loopy enough that I think, you know, that could work out. My pipe dream to Radamel Falcao would be Zlatan Ibrahimovic because he'd be on a free transfer, but you know, that's a discussion for a different time.
I enjoy the pipe dreams as much as everyone else. I think if we do get a player, if Crew SC does find somebody, I suspect it's going to be someone that none of us have heard about because that seems to be the trend, I think, with
from Scandinavia.
This team. Yeah, from Scandinavia or from South America. I don't think that, and I think wisely so, I don't think that that, you know, maybe Tony Aces will want to make a big splash on a guy. And yes, it's one thing if, you know, Michael Carrick or Zlatan is available on a free transfer, but it ain't like that paycheck's going to be anything small, you know, every week still. So just because they don't have a big transfer fee attached to them doesn't mean it's a big cost, but more so just because this is a team that's playing on the budget, and I don't think they want to necessarily, you know, mortgage the future financially by putting a lot in for a player that might be there for a year or two, who's older. But I think you kind of almost touched on it there, Alex. The player I want to see in there the most, unless we're ready to start seeing Christian Martinez, kind of. I'm still worried about an heir apparent for Pipa. I look at it. Yes, he's, you know, right now he's playing really well. But in any of those, if you think about, if you look at the starting 11 for Crew SC and you say, we are going to take away one of these players for a prolonged period of time, freak injury, whatever it may be, I think that is the position, that and striker, your attacking midfielder and striker, where you are in the most trouble if either Frederico Higuain or Ola Kamara goes down for a long time. I don't think you could, you know, I think maybe you have to push Justin Miram over there into that position, or you have to play somebody out of their position. So I would like, unless, again, if Christian Martinez is the guy, and I know he's been bouncing up and down from Columbus to USL Cincinnati, I haven't been able to see much of him. So maybe, guys, maybe we think that Christian Martinez is the guy who could fill in for Frederico Higuain if he went down for a prolonged time. But that's a big area of concern for me. Not, again, to take anything away from Pipa, because he's been incredible and I want him to remain healthy, and don't really have a reason to believe that he won't stay healthy this season. But you know how this works. You know how MLS is. And if he goes down for a long time, I think Crew SC could be in trouble.
Well, I also think that you can change formation to kind of deal with a loss of Federico Higuain. God forbid something like that happened. 3-5-2, you can essentially play without an attacking midfielder. You can use the wingers as attacking players. You can have three center midfielders sitting in there and one playing just box to box. And in that circumstance, you could see somebody like Abu or like Will Trapp kind of getting pushed a little bit more forward. You could even see Nico Ness playing as a box to box midfielder if you really wanted to get crazy with things. But I think we have a lot of players who can fill that role. I think Ethan Finley and Justin Miram are both fully capable of doing that. I think Kakuta Mane would be an interesting option in that role as well. I know he's a little bit more of a winger, but Miram seems like the kind of natural fit. I don't think Christian Martinez is ready yet. He's a player that I want to see more from. I'm starting to get a little bit pissed off, to be honest with you, that he's not getting any time on the bench. I'm not saying that he should be starting, but we've seen how many appearances from Alex Cronale, who's a rookie now, and we've had Christian Martinez for over a season now, and he's barely played. I want to see him for 10 minutes. Just give me 10 minutes of Christian Martinez at the end of games when we're leading. Please, Greg Berhalter, please. So that fans can judge him for themselves. I mean, we have these guys on the roster. I want to see him play. But I don't think from the performances he's put in while on loan, I don't think he's ready to be the next Federico Higuain. I think we would have to put somebody else in that role for the time being. But I do think that you can convert a winger to that role without much kind of hassle. Or you could just change the system entirely and just avoid the problem as it totally is. Just avoid it entirely. Just change the system.
Well, we know that's something that Greg Berhalter's been a little bit hesitant to do in previous seasons, although this season, obviously, he's been a little bit more apt to it. We mentioned, of course, Christian Martinez down in Cincinnati, and it looks like we've got the U.S. Open Cup draw coming up. I believe those games will be played mid-June, the 13th and or 14th. And Columbus Crew FC, one of a couple, I believe, three MLS teams that are going to be opening that this fourth round on the road, along with Chicago Fire and Houston Dynamo. But Crew FC will open up on the road either at the aforementioned FC Cincinnati or against Louisville. You know, fellas, I think the big question here is, you know, if they get Cincinnati, that would be, I think that's what a lot of Crew SC fans would like to see, that sort of matchup. What do you guys take away from the cup draw?
Go ahead.
I think it's interesting. Either way, I mean, obviously the FC Cincinnati thing has its own little rivalry, I guess, built in because of the attendance stuff and the back and forth about wanting to come to MLS, and you know, obviously they're in Ohio. But Louisville, I think, would be interesting too. You know, it's close enough that, you know, I mean, this game will likely be on a weekday, I believe, but you know, it's close enough that fans could travel down there theoretically. You know, they're a team that I believe has done decently over the last few years. So either way, I think it makes for an interesting matchup. Columbus having to go to a USL team is interesting as well. And no matter who the opponent is, I'm just intrigued to see what kind of lineup Greg Berhalter elects to use. I think this is the deepest team we've seen in years for Crew SC, and kind of, okay, how seriously are we going to take the Open Cup? I think we know the answer to that, but could they make a run using some of these backup guys? You know, we were just talking about Christian Martinez, a guy like that. You know, get Nico Hansen some more starts, Crenali. You know, they certainly have some guys that, you know, maybe aren't seeing full 90 minutes in MLS play right now when people are healthy, but in this tournament could have an impact. You know, also behind Zach Steffen, maybe give Brad Stuver, assuming he's healthy. You know, I know he's just recently back in kind of full training after his elbow injury. You know, give him a chance. Obviously, that's a guy who came into this season thinking he might be the starter for this team. So I'll be interested to see what they throw out there, and I think either opponent would be fun for Columbus.
Did you just say for Columbus, Pat?
Yes, I did. Okay. Hashtag.
Hashtag for Columbus. I have a question for you, Murph. On the Open Cup, I believe the international roster spots and everything's kind of like null and void, so you can bring up like a Lawless Abubakar or I'm trying to think, Hollingsworth or Obinwa for that, right?
Yeah, those guys can certainly be a part of it.
I'm just thinking, you know, with either way, with Louisville or with FC Cincinnati, they've got game experience, and Hollingsworth's kind of tearing it up, for lack of a better term, in the USL. He's been very productive for the Riverhounds. I almost wouldn't be surprised to see him or Obinwa get some action or get some looks too. But I personally would think those USL guys that are down there right now would see some time, or even maybe a Connor Maloney too, since he just went down to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and Lawless is another one, you know, a guy that I didn't mention there, but obviously he hasn't seen MLS time, but certainly I would imagine would get some Open Cup time, because while he's still pretty raw, I think, you know, I liked what I saw from him in the scrimmages that they had and the bits and pieces from practice. You know, he's certainly learning the game, but the Open Cup would be a good time to get him action in you know, kind of the professional level and wearing a Crew FC uniform.
Oh, well, I followed the FC Cincinnati game on Twitter because they were not broadcasting it because they suck. Between FC Cincinnati and AFC Cleveland, I think is their name.
Are those games not on YouTube?
They did not broadcast it, no. That round was Twitter only. And AFC Cleveland is a fourth division team, and they took
semi-professional, I believe, as well.
Yeah, and they took FC Cincinnati to extra time, and FC Cincinnati finally scored with, I think, 2 or 3 minutes left in extra time, like the 118th minute or something like that. So FC Cincinnati is not a very good team. I know basically nothing about Louisville. I'm not even going to pretend like I know anything about them. I know that they are having a better season than FC Cincinnati, but that's not saying much. So it'll be interesting no matter what happens. I kind of hope that we go to Cincinnati because I just want the people on Twitter who are FC Cincinnati fans to be quiet, and I feel like there's a chance that this will make them be quiet. And if we go there and we put all of our rookies out there and we beat them by 6 goals in front of a sold-out FC Cincinnati crowd, and then their FC Cincinnati Twitter account tweets out, "Thank you for our great fans for this whatever attendance number it is."
50,902.
Yeah, exactly. That maybe they'll just be quiet for a year or two. Because last year, there were FC Cincinnati fans who were literally tweeting me saying, "Oh, well, you're lucky that the Rowdies beat you, because we would have beat you if we would have advanced the next round." We killed the Rowdies after they beat you. You are not better than Columbus Crew SC. I'm sorry. It's not even your fault. It's the way that the leagues are set up. It's a different pay grade, everything.
Not only did we kill the Rowdies, I believe Hollingsworth scored 2 goals in that game.
Yeah, it was not particularly close. But there is this kind of sort of rivalry that's developing, but it's the weirdest rivalry ever. I mean, it reminds me of when we all hated Dayton Dutch Lions, but it was not really a legitimate thing because it was never close. This is just a weird thing. I want it to stop.
They took Eddie Gavin from us.
Yeah, I know, but even before that, people were like, "Yeah, man, screw Dayton Dutch Lions." And it was like, okay, whatever. But they have MLS ambitions. I'm not sure that their ambitions are going to be realized now that Tampa Bay Rowdies have got their stadium approved. So I'm not sure that this will ever develop more beyond just this Open Cup rivalry, but we haven't played them yet, so let's play them, let's beat them. Maybe they'll be quiet. I would love for them to be quiet. My Twitter would be so much nicer if they would just be quiet. Back to you guys. I'm done ranting.
I'll tell you what, I do think, you know, as much as Crew fans and, you know, in the front office want to kind of shrug off the FC Cincinnati stuff, and rightfully so, I don't think it's an accident that there's an Ohio flag on the back of the new Crew jerseys, the new yellow banana kits that came out this past year. I think they're trying to make sure that it's pretty clear that this is the Ohio team here in Columbus, and the rest of, and trying to, you know, appeal to a broader statewide audience, not just this Columbus regional. Just to kind of maybe take a little bit of wind out the sails for a team like FC Cincinnati, which, again, yeah, the league's completely different, you know, different level. But I also look at that as a game that could be a trap game for Columbus because of some of those reasons, because this is an FC Cincinnati game team that would be really pumped up. This would be the biggest game of the season for them. You've got a Columbus team that would be trotting out, you know, a lot of rookies that, you know, has shown under Greg Berhalter that they don't really take the U.S. Open Cup seriously in terms of trying to compete and win. And I think I do look at it as a bit of a trap game, possibly.
I feel like you could put Frankie Hadick's kid out there with 10 other Crew players and we would still win. Like, I'm not at all worried about FC Cincinnati. I just am not.
To be fair, Frankie Hadook's kid is a Crew player.
I know, that's what I'm
saying.
Academy,
but
yeah,
still.
Get a Crew junior in there with 10 other actual professional Crew players, and I still think we win.
It wouldn't surprise me if they play FC Cincinnati if the score ends up being a little higher than normal Open Cup games.
Well, certainly still to be seen. FC Cincinnati, we're talking about it, of course, like it's a foregone conclusion. And
hey, guys, Louisville can win.
Yeah, that's what I was about getting to. It's like Louisville, they still got to take care of business there. So
yeah, but if Louisville wins, there's no good story. There's no, you know, there's no pizzazz, there's no anger. I mean, I think that the Open Cup committee is licking its fingers and probably hoping that Cincinnati wins just for the sake of how many storylines are going to be about, more from the FC Cincinnati point, about Cincinnati playing Columbus and, you know, the crowd that they're going to get at Nippert, and they're, oh my gosh, they're going to have to remove the tarps to get more people in there because it's just going to be an insane match. So, I don't know. To be fair, honestly, I really do hope Columbus plays FC Cincinnati, and I will go down, and I will cover the game, and whatever. You know, it's... Maybe I because I've lived in Cincinnati for so long, but to me, I don't. It doesn't really matter.
So, FC Cincinnati had 8,000 people show up for their Open Cup game last year, which is good for USL or whatever they are.
That's 3,000 more than what normally shows up at Crew Stadium. For
yeah,
Open
but
Cup games.
But the Crew announced attendance is usually more than 8,000, I believe, just because of season tickets and whatnot. And they also had to pay for those tickets, and the Cincinnati ones didn't. See my rant several podcasts ago.
Mm-hmm. So, Louisville.
But we're not talking 50,000 people showing up for an Open Cup game. Let's just clarify that real quick.
Louisville have 15 points in 8 games in the USL season, and FC Cincinnati have 12 points in 10 games. So, it's likely that Louisville will beat FC Cincinnati, and all of this will be a worthless discussion. But if FC Cincinnati were to beat Louisville, and their fans got super hyped up about this, and then we played our starting lineup and just put up a double-digit score on them or something like that, I would really enjoy that, and it would be a worthwhile season for me at that point, basically. As a season ticket holder, I would feel like I had gotten my money's worth for the year just watching that one game. So please, Precourt, if we get Cincinnati, tell Greg to play the starters and to destroy them. And to make the little FC Cincinnati kid fans cry before they leave the stadium. That's what I want. I want tears. Real tears.
Alex is in rare form tonight.
Growing the game.
Yeah.
Well, we do have, you know, we don't want to look past to that, you know, primetime matchup against FC Cincinnati and or Louisville City. But there is a game this weekend that we also should probably touch on for another little piece of hardware that you fellas might be familiar of. It's a little thing called the Trillium Cup. That's right. The Trillium Cup is settled this weekend when Crew's going to take on Toronto. Third game this game number 14 for Columbus, and sorry, by this weekend, I mean Friday. Third game already here, just 14 games in, been two pretty close games, and, Crew getting the win in the first one, the second, getting an early lead, and then, leaving a brown stain in the bed. As they gave up two late goals to Toronto to lose 2-1 at the Tiny Demon Fortress. Going back up to Toronto for this one, fellas, what do we see as the outcome coming up?
Well, I don't know. I think
awkward
that there's
silence is the outcome. All right, who's buzzing?
It's Murph. Murph's mic is freaking out.
Here's Toronto. Toronto's
okay.
Calling in. There we go.
I got him. I got him. I muted you, Patrick. I'm sorry. I don't know how this game is going to go, but I just want to say for the record my yearly rant about the Trillium Cup, that the trophy does not matter. That Toronto FC is not a real rival of Columbus Crew FC as far as I'm concerned, and that it is just another game. So whatever happens, I don't want people being like, oh, man, we lost the Trillium Cup. Doesn't matter. When we win it, nobody cares. When we lose, nobody should care. So I don't know how it's going to happen. I think that we play okay against Toronto, to be totally honest. I think that we have usually looked okay against them. I thought when Jovinko played, we actually looked better than when Jovinko didn't play, which is kind of an interesting dynamic. But it could go either way. These are two very evenly matched teams. I think one of the major factors, again, I know I keep harping on this, but whether or not Artur plays. I think we are a much better team when Artur is there. So if this is some sort of a minor knock and he's fully fit for Friday, I think we'll do well. But if he's out, then you could see a lot of problems coming out because Sebastian Jovinko running against Muhammad Abu and Will Trapp, that could be trouble. Because Jovinko is very similar to Fagundes, except better in basically every single area. So that could be trouble. But hopefully everything will be okay and Artur will be healthy and we will win the Trillium Cup, and then we can all celebrate for 30 seconds before we move on to the next match.
No one else thinks too much about this matchup?
Well, I mean, you know, I always like to see this match. I always felt like Higuain tends to turn it on against Michael Bradley. That might be a fictitious matchup I make in my head as I watch the game, but he seems to get play a little more pissed off against Michael Bradley, which, you know, it's almost like he rises up to the challenge, but he really does that against any other team's, you know, number 10 or in dynamic central midfielder. But I agree with Alex. I feel like the team played immensely better when Giovinco was in, which baffles me. But going forward for this match on Friday night, I think the team would be better. Mohamed Abu needs to sit. I think Ness needs to come back into this defensive midfield with Trapp, allow Trapp to play in that advanced position. And then you put Alex Crenali back there with Jonathan Mensah, or even Josh Williams, because Josh Williams is very familiar with this former team in Toronto. But I think you need to move Ness into the defensive midfield and either backfill with Crenali or Williams next to Mensah.
Well, I don't know if Alex is just half asleep, but Giovinco won't play in this game. He's hurt. So I don't know if that's a good thing or not based on what you said, but he's been out for – or he came back, got hurt, and will miss, according to MLS Soccer, several weeks. But – I think they played two pretty good games against Toronto. Yes, they lost the second one, but you know, against a pretty good Toronto team that had won five in a row, I think coming into that game, it was a good performance for, you know, 82 minutes or so. With that said, I never have a good feeling about this team going up to Toronto. You know, they're in good form. I think they tied last weekend, which ended that six game winning streak, but. You know, I think this is a really good team. I'll be very interested to see, you know, how Columbus responds, especially after last week, you know, going on the road for the third straight match. You know, not as short of a week as we saw with the Wednesday matches, but a little bit shorter week going Sunday to Friday. The Arthur thing is certainly something to keep an eye on this week, but yeah, they'll have to figure something out. But yeah, I don't have a great feeling about this game, but I'm also not freaking out about it.
I will be just arriving halfway across the world right about probably when this game starts on Friday. So I'm going to find me a computer and try to watch this game and see what happens. But, you know, Toronto's actually showing that they deserve to be in the MLS Cup final last year. And I think they've shown, and in turn, because of that, I think the Crew has shown that they can keep up with them, you know, foot to foot, head to head. So I would be interested to see. Crew was the better team in the last game until they pooped the bed late, but I would love to see them win. The Crew winning in Toronto is always a great thing because then their fans just leave miserable, and it's fantastic to my cold, hard soul.
Well, and Toronto is one of those teams where you look at it, you look at them in the standings, they're number one. In the East, just one loss coming to Crew SC and five draws, and sort of an example of what we were hitting on earlier of a team that manages to find a way to salvage points. I mean, you look at the win that they took away in Columbus, which should have been, you know, a draw maybe at best for them that they're able to get a win in. So this is it's a team that, again, Columbus is the only team that's beaten them so far, and seeing them so often so early, I think, you know, does sort of benefit both of these teams. I think there's going to be a lot of familiarity, and anytime you can get them without Giovinco, I think you've got a pretty good chance. But it's going to be a tough one for Crew SC. But I know the Trillium Cup. It's not a big deal or anything, but I'll still take any hardware. Okay, I'm a Cleveland sports fan, and I know the Cavs won, but I'll take any excuse I can to have a trophy to parade around, especially when I can rub it in the face of some Canadians.
It's always a good day to mock Canadians.
It certainly is. Well, we're going to go get your, some picks after this in a bit. But first, we're going to give a shout-out to our sponsors. And that would be Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Tone Street in East Franklinton. And the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street, 21 on Up Barcade. Although, if you're in Whistler, you only have to be 19 to have beer.
It's 18, eh?
Oh, yeah, 18. Sorry about that. Anyway, there's
Bart, do they have a Labatt's Blue over there?
Oh yeah, but I'd rather get a Canadian. That's what they call Molson in Canada. They actually call it a Canadian. I can verify that. I've been up to Canada a number of times. I've ordered a Molson, and they looked at me weird and they said, "Hey, buddy, I don't know what you're looking for." And I said, "Yeah, Molson. Oh, you mean a Canadian?" So, yeah, there you go. I learned you something a little bit about Canada. And now we're going to have Ralph learn us a little something about what the result of this upcoming game Friday is going to be.
Well, I'll tell you, I really like the boys in black and gold, eh? And they're going to be traveling up north to Toronto, and the Maple Leafs aren't playing. But, I unfortunately see Tucson Ricketts putting a... putting up another performance against the boys in black and go, no, I'm just kidding. Oh, I can't keep that shtick up. Big game Friday night. BMO's always rocking. It seems like ever since they got the remodel in there that that place is jumping. I actually really want to get up there and check a game out. Off note, I don't know why I'm talking out loud right now. I'm going to go against the grain. I could see Toronto walking out with us 2-1 at home.
I think this game will be interesting. I think the last two games were kind of different in terms of the way that they happened. Obviously, with Toronto scoring late in those, Toronto scoring early in the first one, and then the two late goals in the second one. I think that Crew SC still has a lot to prove of itself on the road. They've been better, obviously, than they were last year, already getting two road wins. But, I think this could be a tough one. I'll probably say 2-1 in a second straight game day week that could have been a nationally televised game, but Columbus once again gets overlooked.
2-1 whom?
Toronto, sorry.
All right, Alex?
Oh, ye of little faith. It's going to be 2-0 to Columbus Crew SC. Two goals from Ola Kamara. Arthur's going to play. Falcao will not be needed. He will be in the stands, but Berhalter won't need him. So it'll be fine. Ola's going to get it done.
The stands. He's going to be winning the stands.
Yeah, he'll be there in case we need him, but he's mainly just trying to look at what his future team is going to be like. He's just there to watch. He's signing 2 weeks from now. That's what I've heard.
From our sources.
Yeah. Yeah, these are my amazing sources that live inside my head.
First of all, we're going to start a GoFundMe to get Murph a new headset because his headset's driving me nuts. That's number one. Number two, I'm kind of going to go against the grain, too. I think we win one on the road for a change. I mean, I know we just won in Montreal, but we keep our Canada streak going, and we win... 3-2.
Oh, I'll tell you what, Sam. I think you stole my thunder there, eh, bud? Because that's what I was about to predict for the win, a big win for the black and gold.
And through Canadian form, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. You better be sorry about that. We'll be pouring a big old gallon of maple syrup into the Trillium Cup to drink it there on the BMO field as the courageous victors for Columbus Crew SC with a big 3-2 win against Toronto in the game to capture the Trillium Cup.
This is fantastic.
Bravo. Bart has to do every Canadian game this way now.
I'm just going to say that Bart will no longer be on the podcast for this.
I hope we get an Open Cup match against like the Ottawa Fury or like FC Edmonton.
US Open Cup, man. That can't happen.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. Never mind that.
Get some. Hey, if Crew SC gets back in Champions League, get back in there. But now that should, for many reasons, that should wrap it up for this week of the Massive Report. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you next week. Bye, buddies.